Right. So we are. I've decided to start with the first ikkah, and we have a short class today. We're only going to be able to be on air for 30 minutes, so we'll only really get going with this, and we won't be able to take it much further than the first introduction. But let's get into the first ikkah. As you know, there are 13 ikrim. We've had a number of introductory classes to them, and the first five of the ikrim deal with God and man's relationship with and understanding of, really understanding with more than relationship, but understanding of God. So let's read the first yesod. As you know, these are taken from the Rambam's introduction to the commentary on the Mishnah, to the Peirichelik, excuse me, I'm still in yesterday's mode when we're talking about Torah Shebaal Peh. The Rambam wrote a commentary on the Mishnah, and when he got to Peirichelik in Sanhedrin, the 10th Peirik of Sanhedrin, he wrote this introduction in which he includes the 13 principles of faith. Now, he says, I've brought you the Hebrew, which is a translation from the Arabic, Rav Shilad's translation, and I've also brought you the English, which is actually Rabbi Bleich's version that he uses in his book with Perfect Faith, which is on the bibliography that I handed out at the beginning. So let's actually read it in English in Rabbi Black's version, and we'll dip into the Hebrew as and when we feel we need to. So let's go. The first principle of faith: the existence of the Creator, praise be He, that's the Rambam's language, praise be He, i.e. that there is an existent being invested with the highest perfection of existence, and we're going to have to analyze this as we go through, but we'll see there are different levels of existence. There's existence that is dependent for something else on its existence, and there's existence which is independent of anything else for its existence. And he says this is the most perfect, God's existence is the most perfect of existences. He is the cause of the existence of all existent things. I know this sounds like the maximum number of times you say the word existent in like 8 lines, but you'll see, it makes sense. He is the cause of the existence of all existent things. In him, they exist. And from him emanates their continued existence. If we could suppose the removal of his existence, then the existence of all things would entirely cease, and there would not be left any independent existence whatsoever. But if, on the other hand, we could suppose the removal of all existent things but he, his existence, blessed be he, would not cease to be, neither would it suffer any diminution. For he, exalted be he, is self-sufficient, and his existence needs the aid of no existence outside his. Whatsoever is outside him, the intelligences, i.e. the angels, and the bodies of the spheres, by which he's talking about the cosmos, and the things below these, all of them need him for their existence. This is the first cardinal doctrine of faith, which is indicated by the commandment, I am the Lord your God. That's the beginning to the end of the first ikkah. And I've summarized underneath the essential elements of the ikkah, which are, number one, that it posits the existence of God, that existence is complete and the most perfect possible level of existence, that it is the cause of all other existence, that all matter in the physical universe depends on that existence, and therefore it's inconceivable that God couldn't exist, because if God didn't exist, nothing would exist. That God is not dependent on anything else, and therefore if those other things didn't exist, God would still exist. And also that this Ikar is contained in the first of the Ten Commandments, Anochi Hashem Elokeinu. Now, I want to say a few words on that, and then we can go into it further. The first thing is that the Rambam's position on these first few ikrim, certainly the first one, the second one, and the third one, is that they can all be proved philosophically. They do not require revelation in order to teach them to us. And therefore, the Rambam is going to show us in the first three ikrim, which are the existence of God, and the unity of God, and the fact that God has no attributes, no physicality even, that all of these things have to be so because they can be philosophically proven to be so. And you'd expect the Rambam to come from a philosophical perspective, because as we'll see as we go through these sheets, his approach to these issues is very much that they are based on Aristotle, they are based on the Greek systems of wisdom. And the understanding in the medieval thinkers that were coming from this school of thought was that the existence of God could indeed be philosophically proved. In addition to which, we have revelation, which is the Torah, and that's why he says that not only can this be philosophically proved, but this is also indicated by the first mitzvah, Anochi Hashem Elokeichem. And that is, if you like, the first, well, it is the first of the Ten Commandments, and therefore for the Rambam, the first of the Ten Commandments is a mitzvah, is a command to know that God exists. And I use the word know advisedly, because we're going to see in a minute, this word knowledge is very critical. There's obviously a lot to be said about this, and we're not leaving this source behind, but I want to read one other, or two other sources, before we then discuss all of these things. The Rambam, of course, didn't only write in the Yigdal Ikrim. He also wrote the Mishnah Torah. And the Mishnah Torah was his halachic work, which he did write in Hebrew, and therefore which we can read in the original Hebrew. And the very first halacha that he writes in the Mishnah Torah, which is his magnum opus, his halacha book for all time, for everywhere, for when Mashiach comes, before Mashiach comes, when the temple's been, when the temple's not built, unlike the Shulchan Aruch, which is a practical halachic guide for everyday living, the Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah as the absolute guide to everything that Torah Shebaal Peh contains. And therefore, whereas the Shulchan Aruch starts how you get up in the morning, when you get up in the morning, open your eyes, say Modi Ani, wash your hands, go daven Shacharis, the Rambam can't start that way. The Rambam cannot start his halacha work with get up in the morning, because it's much more fundamental. Therefore, he starts his halacha work with the basic, what he calls Yesodei HaTorah, the most fundamental principles of Torah. And if we look at number four, please, we look at number four and we'll put that together with what he has to say in the Yud Gimel Ikrim that we just read. So have a look at number four. So he starts like this. This is the first halacha of the first book of the first volume of the Mishnah Torah. Yesod HaYesodis, the foundation of all foundations, Va'amud HaChochmas, and the pillar of all wisdoms. Now, of course, you know why he's picked those words, and I've kind of given it away why he's picked those words. It's because there was a long-standing minhag to begin a book with Hashem's name. So he begins Yud, and then a Hey, and then a Vav, and a Hey. So the pillar of all pillars, and the foundation of all wisdoms, and the next word is critical, is Leida, to know. To know. Sheyesha Matsirishin, that there is a first cause, for whom Mamsi Kolanimsa, and he gives existence to all that exists. And you'll see there's a lot of crossover between what he writes here and what he wrote before. For Kolanimsaim, Mishamayim Va'aris, all that which exists in the heaven and the earth, Umashane Beinehim, and everything in between them, Loinimtu does not exist, Ella Mi'amitat Himatsoim, only because of the reality of his existence. All of their existence is dependent on him, and he is not dependent on them. But im, bet. That's the first halacha. First halacha that every Jew needs to know is everything depends in existence on God, and that is something everyone has to know later. No, he doesn't use the word imunah. He doesn't use the concept of faith or belief. He uses the concept of knowledge. Bet. Ve'im ya'ale al hadas. If you were to imagine, he says, shehu einu matsui, that for 1 minute God didn't exist. Ein davar acher yachol lehimatsa'ot. Nothing else in existence could possibly exist, because God underpins everything. Gimel, the im ya'aleh al hadas, and if you were equally to imagine she'ein kol hanimtzaim milvado mitzuyim, that everything else outside God were for 1 second to cease to exist, hu levado yihyeh matzui, he would still definitely exist alone. V'lo yivatel hu lebitulam, he would not be cancelled out or nullified or destroyed or wiped out in any sense by their lack, by them being wiped out. She'kol hanimtzaim tzrichin lo, because everything in existence requires him. For who baruch hu, and he blessed be he, eino tzorich lehem, does not need them. Loi echad mehem, not even one of them. Lefikach, therefore, he says, ein amitato ka amitat echad mehem. His reality, his truth, is not like the reality of everything else. There is a qualitative difference in the reality of God to the reality of everything else. Then Dalad. For who shehanavi oimer, and that's what it means when the prophet said, Hashem Elokeichem emes. Which is how we finish the Shema, we add the word emes. Hashem Elokeichem emes, Hashem Elokim emes, excuse me. God, the Lord, is King. V'hu levadoi ha-emes, meaning he alone is truth. V'ein la'achar emes ka'amitato, nothing else has truth like his truth. V'hu she'ha-Torah omeret ein od milvado. He brings in the Torah when it says ein od milvado. What does ein od milvado mean?
there is nothing other than God. Now, the Rambam is not reading that in a kind of Hasidic, modern sense, meaning that there is nothing other than God. In other words, everything is really God. He's reading it to mean there is nothing that has real existence. There's nothing that has MS, in the most ultimate sense of an existence that doesn't depend on other existence, except for God. Kaloima, Ein Sham Matsui MS, there is no real reality in terms of real existence, Milvad Doikmoto, apart from like him. And then he goes on, and we'll just finish with this box here in Hay. This is the next halacha. Hamotzi hazeh, this being, this existence, who Elokei Ha'olam, is the God of the world, Adon Kol Ha'aretz, and the ruler of the whole universe. Who Hamanhig Hagalgal, he is the one that keeps the universe in motion. B'koach she'en lo keitz v'tachlis, with a power which has no end and no limit. B'koach she'en lo hefsek, and with a power that has no break. Shehagalgal soivev tamei, because the universe is in constant motion. The EF Shashiyusa Valoy Masavev, and it's impossible for it to be in motion without having something caused and caused continuing to cause that motion. For Hu Baruch Hu Amasavev, he is the one who gives motion to everything. Below Yad, without of course a hand, or below Guf, without a body. And the last halacha he brings here, the Yediyah Davazeh, again the word Yediyah, knowledge of this matter, Mitzvah Asay, is a positive commandment. Shenemar, as it says, Anochi Hashem Elokecho, I am the Lord your God, the first and second commandments. V'kol hamal el adaso sheyesham eloka acher chutz mizeh. If you were to think for one minute that any other God apart from this existed, i.e. it wasn't God giving existence to everything, but it was him in partnership with other things, let's say. Oyve v'loy sase. This is a prohibition, so there's a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah. As it is, lo yeh lecha Elohim achirim. The kaita, the ikah, this is denying the fundamental principle for zehu ikah, God or shehakol taluba, and this is not just an ikah, this is the ikah, the most important ikah, on which everything else rests. Now, we've said a lot, or rather I've said a lot, you haven't said anything, because I haven't asked you yet what you think about all this, but that's the Rambam's first point. And it's not just an ikkah, it is the most fundamental ikkah. And just to bring to your attention, the Rosh Hashanah, the Abarbanel, which I brought you in five, is a brief source. He says, this foundation that God exists necessarily are not on a level equal to that of other foundations. Is not on a level equal to that of other ikrim, but is rather the foundation and the roots of them all, for they all rest on it, and it does not rest on them. Therefore, did he call it the foundation of all foundations? This, everything rests on it. The first thing I want to point out is the Rambam doesn't use the concept of faith. Now, there is no word in Hebrew for faith. Faith is a very Christian concept. When I say the word faith, what do you think? No, I mean without translating it. In English, if I say the word faith,
believing something that you can't prove.
Believing something that you can't prove. I think that's probably a fairly standard definition that people would give to faith. And it's clear that that's not what the Rambam is talking about. Now, of course, you may disagree with the Rambam, you may feel that you can disprove his proof. That's a separate discussion which we can have another time, and I'm not really going to get in this course into trying to prove the Rambam's proofs, because that's, first of all, will take far too long. When he talks in the Morin Avuchim, when he gets into his proofs of God's existence, he says, first you have to understand these 25 steps of Aristotle, yeah, and then once you understand these 25 complex steps of Aristotle, then we can move into the cosmological proof. This is what, by the way, they call the cosmological proof. You've heard that expression? The cosmological proof of God, meaning that God is the first cause, that there has to be a first cause, that ultimately everything is caused by something else, and I'm not necessarily talking about in terms of time. This came before this, and this came before this. But everything is made by something else. Everything only exists because it only comes into being because of something else. This table only exists because there are raw materials which it's made of. And those raw materials only exist because the atoms in them came to be trees, because those atoms used to be carbon molecules, or whatever is floating, etc., etc. And everything only exists because something else brought it into existence. Until, says the Rambam, there comes a point when you can turn around and say, aha, so what made the first thing exist? But even the first is that it sounds like a temporal thing. It's not meant to be a time thing. But what was at the beginning of that chain? To which you can either say, well, it made itself exist, which is logically absurd, because it can't make itself exist if it doesn't exist. Or you can say, I don't know the answer to that question, which is a legitimate answer. Or you can say, what made it exist is something outside the system. Because if you're in the system, you always have to be going back another stage, another stage, another stage. So like kid might ask, what made God? Who made God? That's just because they're thinking in the system. This was made by this, and this was made by this, and this was made by this, and then there's God. So who made God? So, like, a bigger God made God. In which case, what I call God is not God, it's just the next thing down. So who made that? So you ultimately have to get something outside the system, unless you want to say that there is an infinite chain of causes which never comes to an end, and there never needs to be anything which caused it, and there are philosophical reasons why the Rambam's not prepared to say that, and why Aristotle's also not prepared to say that. Okay? But that, in a nutshell, is what the Rambam calls the cosmological proof. And as far, well, he doesn't call it that, but that is the cosmological proof. There are numbers of variations of this, but this is the one he's presenting here. And this, he says, is something you have to know. It's cognitive. It's cognitive. And I want to just maybe draw to your attention something which I find quite helpful, which is set out by Rabbi Norman Lamb. Rabbi Norman Lamb is who? Do you know who he is? Rabbi Norman Lamb was, for many, many years, the dean of Yeshiva University, the Rosh Yeshiva, really. If he was officially the Rosh Yeshiva or the dean, someone will probably correct me if I get it wrong. But he was very much a senior figure in Yeshiva University for many, many decades. He's now retired, and he's emeritus, and he lives in New York. You'll bump into him if you go to the Jewish Center in the Upper West Side. He dabbles there from time to time, and you'll see him there when he's not touring and lecturing things. He's in his 80s now. But he wrote a book a number of years ago called Faith and Doubt, where he, it's not all about faith and doubt, but it's about all sorts of interesting essays. And the first essay is called Faith and Doubt, which is why the book's called Faith and Doubt. And he says basically that there are three types of, now the word faith is a bad word. Because again, I don't like using the word faith, because faith has such a Christian idea, something you can't prove. But I haven't got a better word for it. If I use the word emunah also means something very specific. The word emunah is used in the Torah not to mean any kind of belief at all. What does the word emunah mean? We'll see next time. Trust is a little bit closer.
Like keeping with something even when you can't see the outcome.
Maybe a little bit like that. Emunah means faithfulness. And it's used in a very, you know, material context. For example, it talks about that God is Kael Emunah. God is a God of Emunah. What does that mean? God is a God of Emunah. God doesn't believe in himself. It means that God is faithful to his promise. God promised us that we will, this will happen, this will happen, this will happen. Don't worry. God will stick to, will live up to his beliefs, his promises, not beliefs, his what he said would happen. Similarly, Moshe Rabbeinu, when Moshe Rabbeinu holds up his hands, when the Jewish people are fighting Amalek, yeah, it says his hands were emunah. His hands were emunah. We'll see his passage next time. What does that mean, his hands were emunah? No one believed in their hands, and the hands didn't believe in anyone. It means his hands did the trick, did what they were meant to do. They stood fast because he told them to stand up, and they stood up even to emunah. So the word emunah itself doesn't really mean belief. It just means sticking to something that you have decided is right. So Rabbi, I'm going to use the word faith because it's the best word I can think of right now. But he says there are three types. And this is his formulation, but we'll see how it fits later in with what the Rambam says and what one of the people says. He says there is cognitive faith, okay? And he says what he calls affirmative faith and functional faith. And let me describe what he means by those three, and you'll see how they fit together. He says cognitive faith, or of course cognitive means what?
Your brain.
It's happening in your brain, okay? It's intellectual. Intellect is... What else? Two else? I can't remember what two else. Hold on, try. Cognitive faith is intellectual. Meaning, it's really what the Rambam is talking about in this halacha. It falls under the definition of yidia. It's something that you can know. If you ask somebody, as opposed to define faith, but define knowledge, how would you define knowledge? The English word knowledge. How do you define it?
Something you know.
You can't say about something you know.
Yeah, something that's backed by proof.
Something that's backed by proof. Something that I can prove exists.
Okay? So I know you're sitting in front of me. I wouldn't say I believe that you're sitting in front of me. I say I know you're sitting in front of me. I know that, you know, Zia's office is out there. How do I know that? Right, maybe it's not there anymore. But by the way, I also know that China exists. Even though I've never been to China, and I've never seen China, except in movies, but they could all be, you know, false, because movies are movies. And I've seen it on maps, but the maps could all be made up, and people, there could be a conspiracy. But no, I don't believe that China exists. I know that China exists. Knowledge is a complex thing. It's not just based on what you experience, but it's based on something that you believe, you can prove legitimately and logically. Okay?
Can you keep a word that you just put there?
Yidia.
Yidia.
Yada. The da'at. Da'at.
Oh, the time.
Da'at. And this is what the Rambam has been talking about. This is why I'm trying to define this for you. This is talking about da'at. It's knowledge. It's cognitive. And therefore, when somebody has doubts in this area, the doubt is a cognitive doubt. Meaning, it's an intellectual doubt. It's an intellectual question. It's something like, how do I have a free will when God knows what I'm about to do? That is a classic cognitive doubt. That kind of question usually doesn't bother people that much. It bothers them when they're in class and they discuss it. But the minute they get out of class, and they get on the bus on the way home, they don't usually think about it much. It's rare that people wake up sweating, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking, yeah, but how do I really have free will when God knows what I'm about to do? Usually, intellectual cognitive faith, when you have a doubt in it, says Rabbi Lamb, you can park it. You can park it in the middle of your brain and get on with your life, and it's something you want to work out, but it's not something that really bothers you deeply normally. Yes?
Who's
famous? Rabbi Lamb, Norman Lamb. Okay. Yeah, and he's not basing it on his just his ideas. He's trying to map out what we're seeing in the Rambam in other places as well. So the Rambam, I'm trying to point out to you, when the Rambam is talking about the Ikrim, he's talking about cognitive faith. He's talking about belief, if you like, that I believe that this, I believe that this, I believe that God has a body, I believe, and when I say belief, I know that God has no body, I know that God has no mood swings, I know that God gave the Torah, I know that God runs the world. These are knowledge-based things. They're cognitive. And the Rambam will say you can either prove them logically, or you can show them through revelation. Revelation is also logical. We believe that God gave the Torah, we have evidence of that, whatever, we can come to that another time. Affirmative. Now this is something else which I think is important, because this is already beyond what the Rambam is talking about, and the Rambam is not the only way of looking at this. Affirmative, says Rav Lam, is much more about relationship. Meaning, when we talk about faith and belief in God, it's not just belief that, it's also belief in. Meaning, if I say to Katie, I believe in you, then that doesn't mean that I believe that you exist. It means, I believe in you. I trust you. I have confidence in you. I wish to invest in you. I have a relationship with you. And therefore, an element of the faith that we have, of the connection that we have with God, is also this. It's affirmative. And it's much more than just happening in my brain. And to a large degree, the Rambam is not really talking about this in the Yud Gimel Ikra. He's much more talking in belief that rather than belief in. But that's not to minimize that aspect of Emunah, or what I call Emunah in the most global sense. A large part of Emunah is a sense of being connected and at ease with God. And by the way, when people have a doubt in this area, that often really bothers them. Because it's not just some intellectual question that they can kind of park, but it's usually much deeper. For example, when people look at the issue of theodicy. Theodicy is the posh technical word for what? Got to get a little bit of vocabulary going if we're going to do this course. Theodicy is, why do bad things happen to good people? It's the question of evil in the world. So why do bad things happen to good people can be a cognitive question this is really fascinating. If God runs the world and if God is one, how can there be evil? And it could be part of our discussion in class, you get on the bus and go home and forget all about it. But it could also be much more personal. It could be not just why does this happen, but why did this person die like this? Why did my friend have this accident when she didn't deserve it? And that's not the kind of question that you can just park. That often does wake people up, upset, and it gets people, you know, emotional. Because this is not just about what you believe that, it's also about the relationship you have with someone. When you feel that someone's let you down, if you feel that God has let you down, then that's not just a cognitive thing. It's a very personal relationship and emotional almost thing. Okay? And I don't think that we're talking about that much over this course. But I'm not by that saying that it's not important. It's critically important. Critically. And finally, he talks about functional faith. Functional faith means doing what the mitzvahs tell us to do. Are you going to keep Shabbos? Or you're not going to keep Shabbos? Are you going to eat kosher? Or you're not going to eat kosher? What are you going to do? There's a lot about doing stuff in Judaism. Are you going to do it or are you not going to do it? And it's interesting because whereas cognitive, intellectual, yediyah knowledge is often based on probabilities, meaning, how convinced you need to be of something before you decide that you know it? And the answer is, depends on what it is, on who you are. You don't need to be 100% convinced of very much in life before you say that you know it. If I say, you know, I made a decision to marry this woman, and I've decided, it's the right decision. That's a idea. That's knowledge. That's an intellectual, cognitive decision. I'm very rarely 100% convinced of these things. How many people are 100% convinced of that the guy they marry is the guy that they're meant to marry? 90%, 80%, hopefully more than 50%. Okay. What about the job that you take, or the career that you develop, or the place that you live, or the seminary that you go to? You know, these are big decisions. They can be life and death decisions sometimes. If a person needs to have an operation, they'll do it based on probabilities. If the doctor says, well, on the balance of probabilities, you know, 70% chance this operation will save you and 30% chance this operation will save you, what are you going to do? You're going to go for the 30%? I mean, you could make an illogical decision. You have the right to do that. But you know that you should go for the 70%. And by the way, when it comes to life and death decisions, you'll even go to 51%. Because if the doctors say, God forbid, you have this disease, and if we don't do anything, for sure you'll be dead in a couple of days. If we do this operation, 51% it'll cure you, but 49% it'll kill you straight away. What are you going to do? You're going to get 51%. You're going to get 51%. You have to.
You have to.
Yeah. You have to. How can you not? So life and death decisions are made on 51%. And therefore, cognitive belief in God and understanding that God exists hopefully will be made more than 51%, but certainly more than 100%. When it comes to functional faith, it's not about percentages. You're either going to keep Shabbos or you're not going to keep Shabbos. You just decide. You're either going to do it or you're not. You can't 51% keep Shabbos or 85% keep Shabbos. And by the way, people say they're agnostics. What does agnostic mean? It usually means that they've decided not to make a decision. That's usually what agnostic means. But they've really made a decision. Because you can be agnostic up here, saying, I don't know, I've weighed it up, I've got this, for this, for this. But you can't be agnostic down here. Because you can't be an agnostic non-Shabbos keeper. Agnostic's funny, isn't it? Agnostics always tend to say, well, I'm not sure, so I'm not going to keep Shabbos. That doesn't make any sense. If you're really not sure, then you should definitely keep Shabbos. Like, what's the downside? If you're really not sure, so you kept Shabbos. What's the worst thing? You lost. You didn't go to the cinema this week. But think what you gained if you're right. Okay. So agnostics are usually not really living up to their agnosticism. It's just usually an excuse. Okay. But here you can be a probability person. But what the Rambam is on this model, what the Rambam is really talking about is up here. That's why he's not talking about belief in or keeping. He's talking about what you understand in your brain. And for the rest of the Yud Gimel Midas, Yud Gimel Ikrim, he'll also be largely talking about that as well. Which is why he brings in philosophy. Because it's not about emotion what he's talking about. There is an emotional side, of course. People are religious for all sorts of reasons. People are religious for societal reasons and for psychological reasons and for relationship reasons. People are religious for a million different reasons. He's not talking about whether you should be frum or not. He's talking about what you're meant to think. That's all.
Okay, that's all. It's not all, but it's a big thing. Comments? All very quiet. Yeah.
You said something earlier about cognitively, like we know that like God doesn't have a body and like doesn't have loose wings, but we only know that based on like what we're told.
No, says the Rambam. We'll see. That's not true.
Okay.
We only know that God is active in the universe in Hashgacha Pratis because of what we're told in the Torah. Yes, but the first few Ikrim that God doesn't have a body. Says the Rambam, and again, you can disagree with him, and you can try and disprove his proof. Says the Rambam, you can absolutely know that logically, without ever having seen a piece of Chumash or Torah or anything. It cannot be that God has a body, for reasons that he'll share. And it cannot be that God has gets happy and sad, for reasons that he'll share.
But, like, it's like, there's, like, Aftis with, like, Chayitza, does that make God happy? There are things that God prefers one over the other.
You said that. The Rambam will say that's not correct. The Rambam will, if being generous, the Rambam will say, I'm not going to put the words into the Rambam's mouth, but I think the Rambam would say, if he were being generous, I know what you're trying to say. What you're trying to say is, we feel that God is happy with us, but you're not really saying God is happy. Or, if he was being less generous, he might say, well, you're an apikoros, obviously you're a heretic. Because you think that God changed. Yesterday he wasn't happy, and now he is happy. He lacked happiness, now he has happiness. What kind of God is that? He says that's a pagan God. So when we say that God will see, when we say that God is happy, what we really say to the Rambam is, we relate to God right now based on how we acted, on the basis that we would, if it were a human being, we would interpret that as happiness. But of course it's not really happiness, because God doesn't change. We'll see how that works. Yes.
I have a question about the idea of perfect existence.
Does
that just refer to the idea that God isn't dependent on anything, or does it also like refer to that like everything God does is good?
No. He's not talking about that everything God does is good. That's a separate issue. Okay. He's talking about that God's existence is not in any way defective or dependent on anything else. Because otherwise it's not really a first cause, because something else is bringing that into existence as well, or he relies on something else for that existence.
But it doesn't go into anything about like that God doesn't lack anything. Like, is that included?
It will be included. We will see that God doesn't lack anything. That's a necessary corollary of it.
Okay.
And therefore, the issue of good and evil, though, is a separate issue which he'll talk about.
So perfect refers to nothing.
Yes, in this particular context, that's what perfect means. Do you have no window? Maybe just a little bit of a pond here. Any other comments? We'll read another couple of sources and then we'll stop. What time is this class then?
6:10.
Okay. You sure?
I'll check. It's 10.
Well, then we're done. Perfect. Well, then we're done. 6:10 it is. And I think we've made a good start. And we will continue, Be'ez Hashem. Please bring this with you next time. But if you find this helpful, keep it in your mind, and we'll talk more about it as we go through. Okay? Have a lovely day.
Do you want to eat the Jewish learning?